Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 16th of November, 2020, and we have the S&P 500 closing on Friday at an all-time high, coming back nicely from the previous day's sell-off. We're only in the shadow of that brief spike high that happened last Monday when we had the potential Pfizer vaccine news that really caused quite an earthquake. I want to get to you, Peter, right away because we have a positive mood overnight. You've noticed, especially the Nikkei, which has just gone vertical as well. Let's talk a little bit about that. Not just the U.S. here, it's also Asia. And then I think we need to talk about this value versus momentum, which remains, I think, the most interesting sort of thing going on beneath the surface, at least in the U.S.
Interesting stuff going on in Japanese equity markets, as you point out. I mean, so if we start with a non-US equity market for once, slide three, you can see a weekly chart going back from 2013. So basically, since Abenomics, you had that great run-up over the first couple of years, and then you had a decline with the rest of the EM and equity market, and then more push on, and then flat markets for a couple of years, sort of to the tune. But then, as we talked about the last couple of weeks and since the bottom of this COVID-19 sell-off, I mean, there's been a spectacular run-up for Japanese equities, and I think it's a combination of multiple things. It's a combination of a very good handling of the pandemic. Their businesses are not leveraged to the same degree as Western companies. So I think actually a lot of Japanese companies will come out of this crisis stronger than compared to the to its some of its competitors in Europe and the US that typically use more leverage on the balance sheet. And we're touching new highs. I mean, we have a full, and this is a weekly bar, but if you took the daily, it's a full bar from the open to open to close, with the high being the close, 26,000, just 10 points shy of that, 2.6% up this today, and it's the highest level since 1991. So very spectacular move there, and I think it's also driven by the fact that the China is also driving action in Asia and with the rebound there.
Yeah, I think as well, maybe specifically to what's been some anticipation around this trade deal that was just signed at the weekend. The RCEP, it's a bit of a mouthful, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, signed by 15 nations, including Japan and China, of course, South Korea, Australia, and New Zealand also on the list. It apparently is not as comprehensive as the original TPP that US President Trump nixed, but it will see reduction in tariffs and other agreements around e-commerce and intellectual property and a number of other things. And I don't know if that's maybe sort of adding at the margin to the positive mood out there.
It is probably John. Sorry, just because then
No, sorry.
you can see from the industries that are reacting in the Japanese equity market and Asia in general that it's consumer discretionaries which benefit the most from trade deals and then industrials. So that's sort of the driver.
Yeah, and as well on slide five, just pointing out the remarkable run we've had higher in the Chinese currency. The big chart is the dollar CNH, which I thought might be in for some consolidation, but maybe. As this is China signing on to a major trade deal, it looks good for the currency. It's sort of an expression of strength to have the currency on the strong end of the recent spectrum there. And then in the inset, I just put that reference basket that is sort of the official broader CNY level that the government maintains. And you can see it's at a major level there. And if we're breaking that, it could go to that 98 area. In other words, if there's nothing wrong with the basket staying stable here and dollar CNH running lower, but that means it would be mostly powered by dollar weakness rather than as Chinese renminbi strength. But Ola, this trade deal, Asian strength, we're seeing the copper price, much higher overnight. I assume all this is kind of feeding into key commodity markets as well.
Yes, absolutely, John. For start off from the helicopter, commodities are broadly speaking trading higher this morning, even gold, which is also catching a bit of a small bit here with the weaker dollar. But the energy space is also powering ahead with crude oil up to more than 2%. And then really the one that caught the attention overnight was copper, because it really is the caught in the well is in the crosshairs of Asian demand. And when we've seen them basically multiple supporting drivers overnight, then that was enough to for copper to jump to the highest level in almost 30 months, getting closer to that that recent high we had back in 2018 at 232.20. But it was industrial production, fixed asset investment that both beat expectations. The PBOC injected the liquidity while keeping rates unchanged. There had been a little bit of speculation that he may be a bit hawkish on that front, but he wasn't. And then also the COVID-19 case, which continues to surge now in across the US, we are seeing some supply disruptions starting to emerge again. So potentially a perfect storm for copper here at this stage, at least.
All right. And one of the key markets we really looked into last week as a sort of a potential driver, certainly in the momentum versus value, but also just market energy in general, and that is the long end of the U.S. yield curve, where we were pushing up against that 1% level almost in the U.S. 10-year benchmark. You can see a chart on slide 4 in today's slide deck. We've backed off of that late last week. We saw a very ugly November preliminary University of Michigan survey in terms of the sentiment on the expectation side dropped a full 8 points. That's a very massive drop, really. Whether it's Trump voters disappointed with the election outcome, or I think it's more likely that it's the COVID-19 is a resurgence is running a bit out of control. So you have that sort of awkwardness of the near-term nervousness versus the hoped-for longer-term promise of a vaccine. But as long as that yield curve stays sort of tamed and these longer rates stay tamed, then there's less potential for energy, and it's very easy to see dollar weaker, everything sort of celebrating risk going higher. But things get a bit testy, I think, if we see those yields heading higher. So I just would remind folks to keep an eye on the longer end of the yield curve. But Peter, back to equities and value versus momentum, where we talked last week about how that vaccine news helped to trigger a so-called quant quake. And I would encourage once again, if you haven't had a listen to last week's podcasts, if I'm not mistaken, it was Thursday's podcast. We talked about this in a lot of detail, but take us through the latest of what you're seeing on that equation.
Sure. I think we're getting a little bit of a clue again this morning, judging from the Japanese session, that the value stocks, the stocks that have the highest spread to price targets from analysts, and those tend to overlap a little bit. You also see on that on slide 6 the high dividend yield stocks also being the ones that are bid, and that fits with the real estate financials industrials being bid in Japan, and you're seeing the S&P 500 futures and the Dow Jones futures sprinting higher relative to the Nasdaq 100 futures here in early trading in Europe session, so that sort of indicates that this potential value trade has more to go. We internally have talked about that. Communication services companies, where you find companies like Disney, Facebook, Google, and then in the consumer discretionary, where you find Amazon, and then technology, where you find Apple, etc. These type of companies have become extremely rate sensitive, and the missing piece in the equation before we can sort of go all in tactically on value and high beta stocks, and we could get that signal this week, is if we see a significant breakout on longer term yields in the US treasury markets. It could be 1%, it could be 1.1%, but around that area, that if we flip above that point, we could sort of see an extension and a more massive rotation, because there's a lot of money still placed on the on one side, going along technology and betting on central banks to keep interest rates at very low level for a long time, and that inflation won't come anytime soon. So I think there's a lot of stake recently, and as you can also see on slide 6, energy was the best performing industry last week, which is kind of interesting, because it almost like the investors took the clue from rising interest rate as a positive outlook. But then at the same time, Ola, you had that report out from IEA saying that oil demand would maybe not recover until very late into 2021. So I feel energy is probably the one that is really caught here on the back foot. But I think financials and industrials, some of the more classic high beta company industries or sectors will continue to do well.
Or potentially, Peter, just simply the fact that the market is starting to prepare for a vaccine and the implications of that, and the energy sector has obviously been the sector that has been suffering the most in terms of losses after the slowdown in demand. So if the market, so while the crude oil potentially these days can will struggle to really to look ahead to the vaccine because we still got an overhang of supply, then the stock market can obviously they can more look ahead and start to look for what kind of what may come in a year's time. So that's probably why investors are already now starting to dipping their toes back into the energy sector.
Yeah, and talking about earnings, just for, sorry, not earnings, the vaccine. There was an interesting interview over the weekend with the head scientist from the German biotech company BioNTech, which is the key partner with Pfizer on this vaccine that we got the news on more than a week ago. And he actually said that based on his assessment of production ramp up, that if enough people were vaccinated, then by late summer, when we went into the autumn next year, we would beginning to have enough coverage that we should be having a normal winter, in quotation, a normal winter, but at least a winter where we don't is where we don't have to be afraid of the COVID-19 outbreaks and you know, and it's what is the impact on the healthcare system.
And I think also we are expecting additional companies reporting on their vaccine trials this week. So there was obviously a couple of those where there's some raised hopes about similar impact as the one that
And
Pfizer reported last week.
one of those is Moderna, and I don't know how it's possible, but there's something about their vaccine candidate. It uses a similar technology of this mRNA. based solution, but for some reason they're able to deliver it or store it at much higher temperatures, not requiring those extreme refrigeration. But yeah, you know, let's not speculate too much on the science. But yes, it's so key. I think the coming just few weeks is going to be very interesting for further data. I think they were even expecting well before the end of this month some further follow-ups on the Pfizer BioNTech one. But obviously a very critical thing, especially as we talked about how it you know what investors' attitudes are beyond the very short term and the longer yield part of the equation. You talked winter a little bit. I want to get back to Peter on earnings, but before that, and it's interesting. Why is natural gas? We're about to head into the winter here in the U.S. It's just absolutely dumping again. What's going on?
Well, it was 12 degrees and sunny in Copenhagen this weekend, quite a bit above the normal seasonal norm, and I think that's basically what's happening in the U.S. as well. The NOAA was out forecasting higher temperatures into the end of November yesterday, and that comes on top of the weekly stock report that came out on Friday, one day delayed due to a holiday, and that showed a surprise increase in stocks where the market has been expecting the first or second draw of the week of the season. So natural gas is down 7% from the peak we had on Friday. But I think underlying, obviously, as long as we don't run into a very mild winter at the Northern Hemisphere like we did last winter, then the some of the underlying signals are reasonably supportive, I would say. We got LNG flows, basically U.S. exports of LNG continue to hit record highs. Gas demand domestically has been reasonably strong recently. But overall, it is really the it is the overriding factor. Are we going to have any La Niña impact on demand this winter? Or generally, are we going to see a continuation of what we had last year with a mild winter? That will obviously set the stage, but it's going against the prevailing trend across the other commodities this morning.
Yeah. Now back to earnings, but before that, Peter, we talked a little bit about the potential for longer yields heading higher, and actually, we've seen a little bit of a pop in even long yields in Europe. And that seems to be an injection of hope suddenly from the absolute doldrums in the banking sector. But you've pulled up this chart on slide 7 as BBVA is selling its stake in PNC. What's going on there? And maybe a little bit on banks as well. And then the earnings coming up, which is surprising how many earnings reports we're still getting at this point in the calendar.
Yeah, you're surprised about how many companies cannot deliver earnings after 6 weeks after the calendar quarter is closed. But that's for another day and another discussion. But coming back to the BBVA, yeah, it's selling its big stake in PNC for $11.6 billion. It's 45% of BBVA's market value on Friday, and the stock is up more than 20% this morning. I did a piece on European banks a couple of weeks ago when we hit the absolute bottom, so maybe it's a month ago, and where I actually flagged the Spanish banks like Banco Santander and BBVA being extremely cheap on a lot of different ratios relative to other banks in around the Eurozone. And I had not at all anticipated what was going to happen with BBVA. It's a big deal, this one. I think that it raises an interesting question for BBVA, because if you're getting almost $12 billion onto your balance sheet, that is the bank's money, and the ECB right now is prohibiting you from, returning that to shareholders, what are you going to use that $12 billion? I mean, will they get a special exemption from the central bank to, return that money back to the shareholders? We'll have to see. But or maybe they will spend that money on acquisition and increase their strength here in the European continent. So interesting deal. We'll have to see what happens with BBVA, but it definitely puts the entire financial industry on a more positive mood and sentiment, again back to that whole value versus growth slash momentum story, because financials are very important for the value rally.
Yeah, and then on earnings, you've got quite a few names on there on slide 9.
Yeah, today being a Chinese day, I would say with Baidu, iQIYI, and JD.com, obviously with all the attention on China, not to say the least from a lot of big investment managers in the U.S., Ray Dalio and Schwarzman from Blackstone, talking a lot about China these days, and very positively. There's been a lot of critique of those two guys for that, but they talking about China still, growing faster, being bigger than the U.S. in the future, and there is a lot of attention I can see among a lot of equity managers. So I think there will be a lot of focus on these companies today. Interesting to see how they perform. And then tomorrow we'll have NIO, which is also a Chinese company. Really, I think it's up almost 1,000% this year. It's rallying much faster than Tesla, which has actually been stuck in the mud lately. And NIO is one of the fastest growing electrical vehicle companies in China, where the market is really heating up, and a lot of the producers, including NIO, is slashing prices. And then Walmart and Home Depot, obviously consumer story there in the U.S. also tomorrow. And Sea Limited, I have highlighted because we did a specific story on that one. It's a Southeast Asian company listed in Singapore and the U.S., which is really doing really, really great. And then on Wednesday, A.P. Moller - Maersk on the shipping side, interesting for trade perspective. And then Nvidia on the semiconductor side, being the most interesting semiconductor together with AMD these days. And Thursday we have Workday, which is a play on work from home, which is being a little bit under pressure since the Pfizer vaccine news. And that's it, John.
And I just add just on the from a green
Sure.
technologies perspective, we got Chile's SQM. This is the world's second largest lithium supplier. They report on Wednesday, and it's interesting because while the stock price it's listed in New York has rallied from 15 to above 40 since the March low, the price of lithium has actually stayed it's pretty close to the lowest level since early 2016. So I think the market will be quite keen to see their outlook for supply and demand over the coming year. So that's on Wednesday.
All righty. And then on the macro calendar, we have it up on slide 11. I think it might be interesting, potentially nothing, but potentially very interesting to see what the Fed speakers today might be saying, particularly Clarida, the vice on the Board of Governors, excuse me, and often considered a very influential voice in policy. The market will be extremely sensitive, and by the market, I mean especially the US dollar, to any comments related to yield curve control. I think that's really the policy that kicks in a dollar bear market if we have US yields wanting to go higher and then being sort of blockaded by a yield curve control move, let's say out to 10 years, or an operation twist, so-called, where they focus their buying at the longer end of the curve, et cetera. So I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying at some point, and it may be too early for this, what does the Fed say about that? And then I'll just let folks, since we're going on a bit long here, so just look at the different items coming out. U.S. October retail sales, interesting. Tomorrow is perhaps the U.S. data highlight of the week. And then an EM Turkish Central Bank meeting on Thursday. They need to do a massive rate hike to sort of justify, though it's been an incredible move higher in the Turkish lira since President Erdogan has clearly gotten the message and is on board with needing to take what he called, I believe, the bitter medicine of the necessary moves to stabilize the currency. For today, we'll call it a day. And actually, now you've all tuned out probably because I wrapped it up, but I would just need to talk about Trump not conceding anything and his potential moves in his lame duck period. But we'll get to that tomorrow and some of the risks around that. But for today, that's it for today. And we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call. Thanks for joining.